Well, Rick Delano's film, The Principal, is not without controversy. We're going to get into some of that and then talk more about his faith base on this. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Rick Delano, as we talk about his work, The Principal. Rick, tell us why this film was so controversial and some of the hurdles you had to jump.
Yes, it was an astounding experience. I'll never forget it. Last April, we suddenly went from being an obscure little independent science doc to, for a day there, we were the third biggest story on the World Wide Web. And the up and up of this was that one of the participants in the film, Dr. Lawrence Krauss, had received a tweet. And the tweet was actually from a very bitter personal adversary of the executive producer, my partner, Dr. Robertson Jenness, who was the executive producer of the film and had a long-standing personal rivalry with this individual. And this individual tweeted Lawrence Krauss and said, "Hey, did you know that you've been tricked into a film where they've cut your statements up to make it sound like you believe the Earth is in the center of the universe?" And quite understandably, I'm sure Dr. Krauss was quite upset to learn this. What he neglected to do was to contact us.
Simple enough, right?
Yeah. And he could have contacted us and asked to see the film. We would have been happy to show it to him. I have since offered to show the film to many of the participants, not a single one of whom, by the way, has even responded to my request.
Why not?
Well, because I think what we're dealing with here is, you know, the issue we talked about earlier. There are certain ideas that are just so controversial that they amount to thought crimes. We like to think of ourselves as having advanced to a level of scientific objectivity that, you know, we'll consider, you know, ideas and we'll assess them based on the evidence. But it's really not true. This issue has burned heretics before.
Sure has.
It has lost none of its power because what was launched was an absolutely astonishing. All over the world, now this story was run by Time, by NPR, by Salon, by Yahoo, and the story basically was this.
And by the way, Rick, let me get this quick story out on the breaking story that we continue to follow in France. They have arrested so far 7 people this morning as they hunt for the 2 suspects. They don't have them yet in connection with the shooting. So my guess is the 18-year-old that they have in custody who surrendered might be ratting on all these other people. But let's go back to you, Rick.
Well, let's hope so. But yes, so what happened was that a story, and it was such a good story, it was just a delicious story. The smartest guys in the world and Captain Janeway, our narrator, Kate Mulgrew, all are suddenly tricked, you see, into a film that none of them had the slightest idea what it was about, and they've all been selectively edited to make it sound like they believe things they don't believe, and it turns out the guys who make it are geocentrists. Oh, what a delicious story. It was far too good of a story to allow anything as inconvenient as fact-checking to get in the way. So the thing just spread all over the world, wide web. And nobody, not a single one of these news outlets, picked up the phone and called me. Not a single one. It was just too good of a story. So now put yourself in our position. We're a tiny little independent film company. We have no resources. We have, you know, we have a Facebook page.
Right.
And so what do you do?
Which is free.
Yeah, which is free. And so what do? Well, you either surrender or else you take the heat and you start to fight back. And slowly but surely, we started to get the facts out that, A, no, it's simply not true that anybody has been selectively edited in this film. If you listen to Lawrence Krauss in this film, he sounds like Lawrence Krauss. You listen to Michio Kaku, he sounds like
He's him, and you didn't doctor him.
No, not at all. It's because the film would have been terrible then. What a boring movie. I mean, come on. What makes a great film of ideas is ideas. You've got to have the conflict between the ideas. What makes a great documentary film is the intellectual battle. And you can't have an intellectual battle unless you have very strong viewpoints all across the spectrum. That's what makes the film interesting.
Well, why'd you get boycotted in
Chicago? That's an even more interesting one. Okay. So
you're telling me everything, aren't you, Nick?
It's a fascinating thing. Because the Southern Poverty Law Conference, one of the leading left-wing hate groups in the United States, targeted our film for a boycott on the grounds that somehow it had something to do with the Jews, with anti-Semitism.
No, it doesn't.
Of course not. I constantly respond to these kinds of idiocies by saying, you know what? I just went back into the editing room and I checked again, and guess what? There's still nothing about the Jews in there.
They're looking at the wrong film.
They've got the wrong film. But because the controversy here, let's face it, this is the bottom line. If you make a documentary about politicians, you can ask them anything you want. Sports figures, fair game, business leaders, politicians. But you start asking tough questions of scientists, and you have touched a nerve, because in my opinion, there is a radical failure on the part of the investigative journalism community to really apply the same standards to the scientific community that they apply to other aspects of our society. There's a sort of a veneer, a mystique, which I think part of it is just they're intimidated.
Well, first of all, people hear what they want to hear.
Oh, boy, is that true.
You know, here's an example. I'm getting emails from some of our listeners, great listeners, who are simply saying that, and I want to be careful with what I say with regards to this situation in France, in Paris. When I said that the magazine provoked the killers to do their heinous thing, people think that I'm basically endorsing what had happened, and that's the farthest from the truth. These people are sick. They need to be found, convicted, and executed.
Amen.
Executed. What I'm saying is, had the magazine not poked fun at Prophet Muhammad, those 12 people would have been alive today.
Well, you raise a very good point, because, you know, the Christian faith has gone through a very similar situation here with the rise of a secular civilization in the West. And, you know, it's a very difficult line to cross, because I'm personally deeply offended often at the representations of Jesus Christ. But we in the West have made a decision, for better or for worse, to accept these sorts of provocations.
Right. I can get by with Jesus Christ on a piece of toast.
Yeah, it's tough for me.
That is sold on eBay. You know what? The other things are too much.
I get really uncomfortable about it, and I think a lot of my brothers and sisters in the faith do too. But one thing I don't think is ever, ever acceptable is to take an automatic weapon in and start indiscriminately shooting
people. No, it's deplorable. I can't tell you how disgusting it is that people would use religion as a reason to kill.
Amen.
And
it's appalling, and it's an indication that we are reaching a very critical mass stage in our civilization today. Our ability to find common ground is disappearing before our eyes. The pillars are trembling. The financial pillars are trembling. Political pillars are trembling. The cultural and scientific pillars are trembling. It's a very, very, very interesting time to be alive, and it is crucially important, and I think it's a very difficult line to find. But you have to find that line that allows us to live together without compromising what we believe in. It's a very tough job, and we're going to have a real rough go of it.
So I can understand how your film, The Principal, can get fingered and pointed at as being controversial, because people don't listen.
Well, that's exactly right, because we've drawn the battle lines. It's a culture war, and the battle lines are drawn. And sometimes I'll be on the web and I'll be discussing the film with people, And it becomes abundantly clear that to them this is a political question. You are either on the side of science or you are on the side of fundamentalism. And you know, if you draw the battle lines that way, it's desperately bad for science. Because science is supposed to be about experimental outcome.
Didn't Darwin believe in God?
Well, apparently he did cease to believe in God.
Cease to believe.
At the end of his life. That's the best knowledge.
But when he was coming, when he was putting his theories of evolution together, wasn't he a believer?
Yeah, and I think that it's fair to say that it was his theory that, that led him ultimately to a repudiation of his faith. And that's certainly not the case for all believers in Darwin's theory. There are many prominent believers from a number of different religions who both profess to believe in God and to believe that evolution is true. But there is definitely a tension.
Well, back to the boycott in Chicago. Did you get the theater, though, too?
Yeah, we did. The
change?
Story is that we were the wonderful Marcus Cinemas chain, a family-owned chain. The family is actually a family whose patriarch is a Holocaust survivor. And so, needless to say, they were quite taken aback when the SPLC started saying, oh, did you know that this is a bunch of anti-Semites and Jew haters? And I have to just congratulate the Marcus Cinemas because they came under tremendous pressure to cancel the film. And they refused to do it. And they put out a beautiful statement. And they said, you know what? We're aware of the controversy here. We've looked at the film, and there's just nothing there.
I mean, how in the heck could they even come up with that?
It's a very good question, and I have to tell you.
It's the wrong film. Somebody looked at the wrong film and confused yours for that one. It's got to be the only reason.
Either that, or it didn't really matter what's in the film. They wanted to target this film.
Or they came up with excuses.
Yes, exactly. And because, look, like I say, there is a very, very powerful question at stake here. The question of our place in the cosmos is such a powerful question that entire civilizations have gone out of existence and come into existence based on our idea of our place in the cosmos.
Now I'm going to ask you the $64,000 question.
Okay.
Because you were part of interviewing so many scientists, I think you've come up with some of your own conclusions personally.
I have.
I want to know them. I want to know what you think. After you put together the principle, what you believe in now, based on what you put together in that film?
I will tell you this much. I believe that the foundational assumption about reality that shapes our worldview is wrong. That we are, in fact, in a very special, perhaps even central, location in the cosmos. And this fact is absolutely devastating to the present cosmological worldview. It's going to change. It is inevitable in my mind. It'll take years. People will not give up easily on something as foundational as the Copernican principle. It's been the guiding light of science for 400 years, and it's been incredibly successful. So it's not going to go quietly, and that's good too. But it is my opinion that the evidence is already in hand, that strictly apart from religion, apart from any sort of faith-based interpretation, the evidence collected by our telescopes puts Earth in an absolutely astonishingly central position in the cosmos, and I believe that will have enormous implications in the kind of worldview that our children learn when they go to school.
So let's talk about what this all means, how we got here, what our existence is, what it all means. I'm going to tell you a very simple little thing that happened to me a couple of years ago. I was in New York. I had to go up there for, I was on The View with all those girls and women who are on there, and I had a great time. They are brilliant at what they do, and I'm the only guy there. And Whoopi Goldberg was chatting with me about the paranormal. But as I was getting there, you're walking down the streets of New York, you got all these people, they're in their suits. These guys are in their suits with their little briefcases, and the women are there with their briefcases, and everybody's going back and forth, back and forth. Nobody's looking at each other, just doing their thing. And for one split second, Rick, I looked at everybody and said, what the heck is this all about? Who are these people? What are they doing? What's their existence? What does it all mean? I mean, life has got to be more than putting on a suit, grabbing your briefcase, going to work, and coming home again. And I looked at all this.
You've heard the old saw, nobody on their deathbed says, gosh, if I only just could have spent one more day at the office.
Yeah, nobody says that.
Nobody says that.
I looked at all this, and I came away with the most profound question, was what the heck does it all mean? Have you been able to get that answer?
Well, I have definitely adopted for myself, and again, I'm speaking strictly for myself now, I firmly believe that we are, each and every one of us, a direct creation of the creator of the universe. I believe we are going to eternally continue to exist. We will not go out of existence at death. We will find at death that there is an immense justice in creation, that every single thing that we do here is of immense and eternal importance. I firmly believe that we are going to, all of us, meet the creator of the universe. And at that moment is infinitely more important than every briefcase moment, every single moment of rushing to work or concerning ourselves with outcomes. Not that those things aren't important, because they are.
How can a scientist, after what you did to put together the principle, how can they conclude that there's no divine intelligence?
Well, it's a great question. Here's how. If your fundamental assumption about reality is this whole God thing is a myth, science has saved us. Science has brought us out of the darkness of superstition and has given us the light of human reason. That's basically the narrative. Now, if you buy into that, ultimately, the logical end of that thinking is that the whole universe is reducible to particles in motion and mathematical equations. I personally think that is ludicrously false, but that's just my opinion. Brilliant men, very brilliant men and women of science, are utterly convinced that if you depart from the idea that reality boils down to particles and equations, you're back in the world of superstition. So this propensity toward a materialistic worldview is so powerful that every piece of data gets interpreted through that lens. And even things that are so astounding, like the axis of evil, the fact that the universe is pointing to us on its largest scales, that's absolutely ridiculously unexpected. It will be explained away. It will be swept under the carpet until an explanation can be come up with that will accord with the materialist presumption.
And there may never be an explanation.
Well,
and that's my point. We may never get that answer.
That you can always say, there's one final place. See, the believer can always finally at the end say, it's God. And the unbeliever can always finally at the end say, it's coincidence.
Yeah. Well, I don't believe in coincidence.
I don't.
And I want a better answer than just, it's God.
Well, and I don't blame you. And I think that that better answer is the kind of thinking that I personally have encountered in the great theological thinkers of the Western world, Thomas Aquinas preeminently, other great theologians who have wrestled with this question of what can we actually know? Not opinion. What can we know by reason alone, about the Creator? And once we arrive, you've heard the expression of the God of the philosophers themselves reasoned their way to the necessary existence of God long before Jesus Christ came into the world, long before. And this was a intellectual conclusion based upon the observation that existence could not have been self-creating. Something had to bring this universe of change that we observe into existence.
Rick, I want to get your take on the multiverse theory and the Big Bang. Now, I know you're not a physicist, but I want to get your take on that. We'll be back. Welcome back. Rick Delano with us. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about the cosmos with his work, The Principle. Okay, first of all, the multiverse. What did you learn about that, and what do you think, Rick?
Well, the multiverse is a gigantically important development in the history of science, because really, when you go back to the very beginning of the modern scientific method, what did you have? Well, you had a bunch of theologians, you know, and they claim as they were arguing about how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. And the scientists sort of said, you know what, this is futile. Let's concentrate on what we can see, what we can measure, what we can test. And it was an incredibly powerful and successful idea to really apply reason to the causes in the material realm. This is the beginning of the modern scientific method. Now, the irony is this. Science has had such an incredibly successful run that it has almost, in a way, jumped the fence and decided that it doesn't need the help of theology or philosophy or any other way of knowing any longer. They want to reduce all of reality to something that is susceptible of their equations. And they have a problem, because this universe presents such incredible evidence of design, and some of that is what we cover in the film The Principle. And in order to explain this, it becomes more and more and more difficult to explain the appearance of design in the cosmos. So they came up with an alternative. And this comes basically from the quantum theory. The quantum theory says that, you know, there's an infinite probability matrix of events, and an observer will collapse those indeterminacies into an observation. But, you know, the idea goes that by actually making that observation, you're splitting reality off. There's an infinite number of universes where, you know, George is a president of the United States. There's one where Rick is the best scientist in the world. And this notion of the multiverse is essentially, in my view, the attempt to take everything possible and make it actual, so that when we look at this universe that looks so designed, so perfectly tuned for our existence, we can say, yeah, it
maybe
looks real designed, but that's just because we happen to be in the one universe that looks that way. There's an infinity of other universes where we're not, you know, looking at design. So that's the multiverse. It is, in a way, and in fact, Bernard Carr, one of the scientists in the film, said that the multiverse is the ultimate extension of the Copernican principle. Now, the irony is this. We start off criticizing theologians for arguing about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Are we going to end up arguing about how many universes we can never possibly observe?
We argue about everything,
yeah.
Don't we?
It seems to me we're really at a crucial moment here. Science is on the verge of leaping through the looking glass and adopting a methodology that has nothing to do with experiment, has nothing to do with test, has nothing to do with observation. It's purely mathematical metaphysics, and I think it's very dangerous.
Now I'm going to ask a non-physicist, you, what you think about the Big Bang.
I believe that the Big Bang is right at the end of its shelf life. I don't think it will survive yours and my lifetime. The problems are mounting. They are serious. And I think that we are right up at that point now where, look, here's what we've got. In a Big Bang, we have a universe where we don't know where 96% of the mass and energy is, so we just factor it in into an equation. We have to invent an inflation to explain why the universe is so flat.
Mm-hmm.
We have to invent a multiverse, ultimately, to explain why it's so fine-tuned.
We have to invent a starting point.
Exactly, precisely. And these are all problems. You know, we are coming to, Ron Hatch in the film says, we've reached a bunch of dead ends. And I believe it's true. I believe that science has come up against the limitations of the assumptions that have guided it for so long. In cosmology, that is the Copernican principle. if we're going to continue to do science based on the assumption that we're nothing special, you got to have a multiverse to explain how special we look in this universe.
The controversy to me of the Big Bang is, how could something be created out of nothing?
There you go.
What is nothing? You had Lawrence Krauss.
Yeah.
He talked about nothing in your film.
Well, this is funny. We interviewed Lawrence just before his book came out, and I wish that I would have known that that book was coming out. I would have spent more time on that question. But essentially, here's what you come down to. At the end of the day, either God created, because obviously the theologians have always told us that God created the universe from nothing. And logically, that makes sense, because God being the creator, he would be able to create from nothing. But that's a theological answer. The scientist says, no, we're not allowed to talk about God, and we're not allowed to talk about something from nothing through God's mediation. But if we want to explain the beginning of the universe, what did it come from? So literally, Krauss wrote a book called A Universe from Nothing. And in the film,
he's been on the show several times over the years.
So you've heard this. And essentially, the thing that bothers me here, and it bothers me a lot, and it bothers a lot of other people a lot, is that when you read that book, you find that when he says nothing, he doesn't really mean nothing. He means something. He means a quantum realm and virtual particles popping in and out of existence, and then some purported means where those virtual particles just pop out and keep on going, and voila, you've got a universe. Now, my first objection is that's a fallacy of equivocation. Do not say a universe from nothing and then explain to us that you don't really mean nothing. That bothers me. Because the reason to say nothing is to get rid of God. The reason to say that the universe comes from nothing is so that you can credibly say, hey, we don't need God. We just need nothing. Just nothing alone will create the universe. That's an insult to our intelligence. And it is also a fallacy of equivocation. Because the word nothing means nothing. The way it is employed in Dr. Krauss's book, it's actually something. So I object to that. And it's a big battle being fought right now because the physicists are insisting upon their right to redefine that word to fit the mathematical equations that they believe allow them to say the creation does not require a creator.
Where do you fit in things like angels and demons and things that are supposed to be in existence through realm? Where do they fit in?
I believe those things on faith. I cannot point to scientific evidence. Although, when I hear a lot of these UFO stories, I wonder to myself, what are we really seeing there? Is it possible that we are seeing manifestations of spiritual beings? Now, I hasten to add, please, this is not an area that I've thought deeply about, but I do believe on faith, I believe it because I trust who has told me, that these beings do exist, and I cannot claim any knowledge, personal knowledge, of having encountered one, but I do believe they exist, and I believe that it is possible that some of the manifestations that are reported by people who have had direct interaction with beings that really don't fit our species might possibly involve interactions with that level of being.
Rick, so when you put this all together, did you even think you'd be creating this firestorm?
Not for a second. Not for a second. I thought it would be a very interesting film. I expected we would find an audience, but I had not the slightest. Look, my film is opening in AMC multiplex theaters in the biggest city in America next week after next. If we do well there, we're going to go all over the country. This is a science film. This is an independent film, no car crashes, no love scenes. This is about deep ideas. And we are finding a theatrical audience. It's absolutely amazing to me. And I got to hand it to the people who you know, basically launched the all-out assault on our film. They put us on the map. We never could have gotten as far as we've gotten without them. So I want to say thank you very much.
Rick, what's the venue for people to see this? I mean, do they go to your website? Do they go to the theaters like you're going to be in Burbank on the 23rd in January? Where do they go?
Well, the website is the place to start because we are just now getting the momentum to be able to expand this film. If people come to the Burbank showing and to the Orange showing in Los Angeles and up in Spokane, we're opening the same weekend at AMC Multiplexes, and it's on our website. If we do well, we will be in Dallas 2 weeks after that, and we will begin expanding all over the country. We will go exactly as far as the audience takes us. It was never our anticipation to be able to pull off a theatrical release with this film, but we have.
Good for you.
And now it's up to the people. The people will decide. It is up to the audience to decide.
What do you think the reaction's going to be?
Well, so far it's been astoundingly good. I mean, it's just the reviews that we have gotten have been tremendous.
People walk out shaking their head?
Yeah, it's a tough film. I mean, it's not a film that you go there to sit back and vegetate and eat popcorn.
You have to think.
You have to think. But I think there's a lot of people who are ready for that. It certainly seems to. We did very well in Chicago. We hope to do similarly well in Los Angeles and in Spokane. And if we do, we're coming to a theater near you.
And what's your next move? What's your next step?
Well, our next step is to take this as far as it can go theatrically. We have very limited resources. We don't have anything even approximating the kind of money that it takes to get a film into theatrical release. It's only the demand of the audience that's getting us there, and we'll take it as far as it goes. Then immediately when we've gone as far as we can go theatrically, we will release the film in digital and DVD formats, and we are going to begin to take the film around the country and around the world, giving an opportunity for public discussion, debates. We want to get these ideas out there because at the end of the day, we're the people paying for this science. It is something that we have a right, and I would argue an obligation, to be at least somewhat familiar with, because our children are going to grow up in a world that is defined by these scientific observations. And I think everyone has an obligation to at least become aware of the kind of questions that we're facing right now.
What an amazing 10 or 15, 20 years of science. What a time to be alive, Rick.
It's just wonderful. It's just such an exciting thing to know that we are living right at one of those times when all of the pillars are trembling. Everything that has been the solid base upon which we could rely for centuries is suddenly wobbling. It's a very scary time, but it's also an incredibly exciting one.
Have you seen Neil deGrasse Tyson?
I've seen him many times on YouTube, and I did see the Cosmos episode.
Yeah, he's good on that. He's been a great guest on the program. And, you know, shows like that, like your film, The Principal, make you think.
I think it's so important because, look, we, at the end of the day, we are the ones that make sense out of all this. You know, science has its own domain. It has its own authority in its own domain. But at the end of the day, we have to make sense out of all of this. We have to decide what this is telling us about that question that you were talking about when you were in New York. What are all these people doing? What does this all mean? Science cannot answer that question for us. Only we can answer.
Only we can.
And we have to make available to our minds, to our intellects, to our spirits, the input that the incredible scientific work that's being done right now is going to have on our answer to this question.
Have you ever, because I do this a lot, you're walking around late at night looking at the stars in the sky, and you just say with euphoria, this is amazing.
It's amazing. Every once in a while I'll go out to the desert. I used to live in Colorado where I could go out and lie down and watch the entire motion.
Oh, go out to Joshua's tree.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, my God. Yeah.
And you just lie down and you just watch it roll above you. So that if you do it for a few nights, you can actually tell the time by the position of the stars in the sky. And you begin to put yourself back in touch with the ancient way of viewing the universe. Because the only clock that existed in the world for thousands of years was the motion of the heavens. That was our clock. That's how we told time. And to put yourself back into a position where just the glorious beauty and the almost eerie sense of I'm being told a story. These stars are rolling across the sky. They're telling me the time. They're telling me about my place. They're telling me about the way this cosmos is structured. Oh, yeah, I've felt it many times, George. You and I both have shared that experience.
What a great feeling.
Oh, yeah.
So what do the peers now say about the film?
Well, it's been silence. They essentially ganged up on us and tried to discredit us, and that's a very unfortunate because I became friends with some of these guys. I was actually quite friendly.
I mean, are you glad you did this?
Oh, very much so.
Okay.
Oh, good. And
by the way, somebody's asking me if you're going to show it in Utah.
We would love to show it in Utah. Our distributor is in Utah. So we would love to go to Utah. If you go to the website, there is a button there that says demand it. And what we're asking people to do is if you want to see this film, we don't have the big money to do a national campaign. We can only go to places where we know there's an audience that wants to see the film. So go to the website, theprincipalmovie.com, click the button that says demand it, tell us what your city is, tell your friends. If we see the interest, our distributor will book the film there.
Good. I like that. But you would do this again. You'd go through all this all over again.
Oh, absolutely. I love this. You got to understand. It was an incredibly humbling experience to be the focus of, you know, this vilification across the world. It separated me from all of my illusions. And it forced me to say, is this worth it? And the answer was a resounding, yes, it is. And we've just been clawing back ever since then. And we're winning. You know, we have a great film here. And the people, I think, who are fair-minded are going to be curious. Hey, did this guy really trick all these guys? Let's go see for ourselves.
Fool me once.
Yeah.
Rick, we're almost out of time for the hour, but I want you to take phone calls next hour with people who, and this is interesting because you're one of the few non-scientists I've ever interviewed about cosmology and space.
Yeah.
You've learned a lot.
I've spent years, listen, here's the thing, George. I knew I was going to be sitting down with the smartest guys in the world, and I was going to get one shot. So I actually did my homework. And it paid off because a number of these guys said, and we even have it in the raw footage, that it was the best interview they'd ever done.
Good for you.
We did read their papers, and we did read the footnotes.
Yep. You did your homework. I could tell.
Yes, we did.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. We will open up the phone lines as we talk about cosmology. And don't forget, Rick's not a physicist, but he's going to handle your questions the best way he can. We will be right back.